Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Jay Hughes, a.k.a. Dr. J, and I'll be your guide to a sexy, high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Dr. Michael West spoke at the 4th Alcor Conference on Life Extension Technologies in Asilomar, California, on June 17, 2000. He's introduced by Dr. Ralph Merkel, Senior Research Scientist with the Zyvex Corporation.
Our next speaker is going to be Michael West, the founder of Geron, and now the president and CEO of Advanced Cell Technology. He'll be talking about human therapeutic cloning. Michael?
Thank you very much. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit about the aging of cells, and some efforts have been made to try to understand aging on a very simple level. We just heard about a very sophisticated analysis of changes in gene expression and throughout our bodies as we grow old. Another more reductionist approach is to try to just understand a piece of aging, what we call aging in vitro or aging under glass. That's aging of cells in a dish. And the story really begins with trying to understand, of course, aging itself. We all see the face of aging. We see it on all of us. What's remarkable about aging, of course, is its uniformity. We can pretty much look at someone and guess their age. I think that may be evidence that there's some underlying mechanisms of aging. Increasingly, going from ancient times into modern times, we're seeing this rectangularization of the survivorship curve so that we're all living into older and older ages. And increasingly, the major force of morbidity and, of course, mortality is age-related disease. Now, with Darwin and a more sophisticated understanding of how we're made, we came to recognize that we're made of little components of individual living entities that once were life itself. You know, life began as single cells that were a complete entity and were immortal. And as they proliferated, we evolved into a multicellular animal, some cells of which branch off to make the somatic cells, the body cells. Some cells continuing this immortal legacy that is the immortal substratum of life. So you see, this is the modern cell biologist's model of what I was showing you earlier in ancient Egyptian religion. There's an immortal lineage of cells that created you and me that have no dead ancestors. They survived all the insults of cosmic rays and free radical damage from their mitochondria, and all these insults for billions of years. They spun off our bodies and unfortunately stopped there. But we have the chance of our reproductive cells continuing that chain. August Weismann, the German scientist who first proposed this basis of reproduction and the inheritance of our genetic composition, when thinking about this, said, you know, maybe part of the struggle we all have in understanding the sort of philosophical questions of why do we grow old and die is because we have this diagram upside down. We think that an egg is a chicken's way of making another chicken. But he said, maybe we have it upside down. Maybe a chicken is an egg's way of making another egg. Maybe there's an immortal lineage of cells, and we're a simply reproductive machine that helps that cell perpetuate itself. Like the fluff of a dandelion that carries the seed, we're merely a vehicle that carries this immortal lineage of cells. Regardless of how we want to think about it, it's nevertheless an interesting question in cell biology is to understand what is different in the somatic lineages that die every generation. Because after all, they branched out very recently, for many of us here, just 10 or 20 or 30 years, I guess not 10, 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years, from this immortal germline. But the immortal germline has been around for interminably longer periods of time, billions of years. Why does suddenly, in just a few decades, these cells grow old and die. So if we put this in a more modern light, in human biology, we know there's an immortal lineage of cells, which are shown here in blue, which is now called the germline, and then all the somatic cells that branch out every generation, making up our bone and our skins and our blood and all the body cells we just saw this wonderful genetic analysis of. So in a sense, we're an amalgam of immortal and immortal cells, of mortality and immortality. Now, an interesting question, of course, is why is it that all somatic cells are mortal? If you put them in a dish and grow them in the dish, no human cell, until this very recently, that was normal, could proliferate more than 100 doublings. And, of course, that was Leonard Hayflick's contribution to cellular gerontology. And so the model began to be studied of studying cells early in their lifespan and cells at the end of their replicative lifespan, or senescent cells, and comparing them and doing genetics, genomics, other kinds of analysis, trying to understand what causes these cells to grow old. Intriguingly, it was noticed that cells can immortalize. Cancer cells, for instance, have an infinite replicative capacity. What's going on there? How do they acquire that ability? It's an interesting question. There was a novel written some years ago. Wasn't it the Sixth Commandment? I get all these aging novels all mixed up in my mind, where a scientist was trying to understand what made tumor cells immortal. And he studied it in a context of a nursing home and gave all the people tumors. And of course, that was that's always been the age-long concern, that if you could actually change the aging of cells, you might cause another problem, such as cancer. So we decided to look at this at Geron, and look at, these are young and old fibroblasts. These are the original photographs that Len Hayflick published some years ago in Scientific American. And then to explore a model of cellular aging, which was first proposed by a fellow named Alexei Lovnikov. He was a Russian scientist that, after hearing Leonard Hayflick's theory about maybe we age because our cells age, had this epiphany. He was on his way to the train station, and as he tells the story, and as he's waiting for the train, thinking about what he heard in his lecture in Moscow, and he saw the train come into the station. The train reminded him of a chromosome, and he noticed how people don't get into the very end of the train. They get it near the end and kind of spread out from there. And then somehow he connected that to the replication of DNA, as shown here. And here we show how at the very end of the chromosome, there's the enzymes that replicate the DNA were thought not able to replicate the entire strand of the DNA. And so they couldn't, every time a cell divided, they couldn't replicate the very end of one of the strands. It's called the lagging strand. So Lovnikov said, maybe that's the mechanism of aging. You know, the Greek fates. Remember the three fates? The three fates that determine the human lifespan. One spins the thread of life. The second, lachesis, measures it on a measuring stick, sets its lifespan. And the third, atropos, cuts it to its fated length. In a similar way, he proposed that the linear ends of the chromosomes, which are called telomeres, shorten like a burning fuse as our mortal cells, our somatic cells, age. He then also proposed that there was a special gene that was only present in the immortal germline that maintained this telomere, keeping it from shortening. And of course, if you had a burning fuse and you could continually stretch out the fuse, the bomb would never go off. And so the idea was telomerase would keep cells from growing old. Now, the first support of Lovnikov's theory came in, I think it was 1985. Howard Cook in Edinburgh was studying the telomere in human cells, in human aging, not trying to test the Lovnikov hypothesis, but testing something quite different. And he put in a paper in 1985 a diagram that looks something like this. And he said, telomeres, strangely enough, are shortening in our body cells as they grow older. He looked in blood, for instance. But in the reproductive lineage, the telomeres are maintained. And he said, maybe this has something to do with the aging of cells. There is a report, wouldn't want to say how certain it is, I don't think it's that well documented, that telomeres are shortened in progeria, the premature aging syndrome. And of course, progeria having multiple manifestations of aging early on. And of course, then the concept was that the cells immortalized by telomerase by maintaining their telomeres. An enzyme that has an RNA component attached to a protein component, the RNA component teaching the enzyme how to add DNA in this repeated sequence onto the end of the telomere. So the model would be that this telomerase, this blob here at the end of the chromosome, is the immortalizing enzyme. Now, probably a better way of putting it than that is say the absence of telomerase would be a mortalizing event. And the reason is remember, we've got to put the chicken and the egg in the proper positions. The idea is life is naturally immortal. Mortality of cells is a phenotype specifically to the distinct to somatic cell lineages. So we see telomere shortening, indeed, in cultured cells as they grow old. And we finally cloned the catalytic component of telomerase in 1997 at Geron. It allowed us to do the following test. Could we then put that gene into an aging cell and extend its lifespan? I like to say it was an experiment of a lifetime, especially for a person working on cellular aging, because you know you wait your whole life to try to find a way of understanding cellular aging. Well, as I'm sure you've heard, the exciting thing is it worked. Here are young and senescent cells. If we put just this one gene, the catalytic component of telomerase, and express it when it's not normally expressed in a mortal cell, the cells on the left are senescent at a certain PD. On the right are the cells that are expressing telomerase at that same age, still going strong. And, of course, they just keep like they ever ready bunny, isn't it? Or an energizer bunny. They keep just going and going and going. And so the concept would be we could potentially use telomerase in some specific cell types where we could do gene therapy. And, of course, a cell and tissue type that comes to mind are, for instance, the blood-forming cells, because those can be taken out of the body, genetically altered, and put back, for instance. Now, another concept would be, let's take a cell that's in that immortal germline. If we could grow it in the dish, you could then potentially make cells and tissues from it that would be young, because they'd just have budded off from that immortal germline. And so in 95, actually, at Geron, we started an effort to try to isolate the human embryonic stem cell, the first circle shown here on the left. A later cell called the embryonic germ cell is on its way to becoming a sperm and an egg. The idea would be those cells have total power. They're totipotent. They can be branched out and form anything in the body. So if we could grow them in the dish, you could potentially make liver, kidney, anything you needed that was young. Young new tissue. And of course, a lot of what we need to do to treat the problems of aging is transplantation. Like a car that's worn out, you need to replace some parts.
You're listening to Dr. Michael West, President and CEO of Advanced Cell Technology, speaking on human therapeutic cloning on Change Surfer Radio.
Now, the problem is, of course, if I grew embryonic stem cells, as has been grown, as you probably heard, in the last 2 years, for the first time in the laboratory. We can grow all these important cells and tissues that are young, but they're not yours. Your body would reject them. So an interesting concept is to use this technology called cloning, or nuclear transfer, to try to make cells or tissues that a person might need as a result of aging for transplantation, or new heart tissue if you have a failing heart. Now, interestingly, cloning, of course, is an asexual way of reproducing an animal. Instead of using sperm or egg, we're taking cells from the body and putting them back into an egg cell, something that nature never does, and recreating an animal. That's called reproductive cloning. Therapeutic cloning is how I think many people in the cloning field feel we could use cloning to help with the problems of aging. But we're not talking about cloning a human being. The idea here is that we would take a cell from the body, put it into an egg cell, and then just recreate new neurons for Parkinson's disease, or new heart tissue for a failing heart, or whatever you needed. Remember, what cloning teaches us is that a skin cell can go back in time and can create a whole animal. Dolly had kidneys, liver, she had everything. Was all made from, in her case, the breast epithelial cell. You know she was named after Dolly Parton, right? Everyone knows that. That's true. So the concept is we could make anything you needed of your own cells that would not be rejected by what we call therapeutic cloning. Now, our work at Advanced Cell Technology began with work actually in cattle. We took cells from the soma, somatic cells from a cow, put them back in an egg cell, which is our time machine, making little embryos and then putting them into mama cows to make pregnancies. And this is all done under a microscope. Here's an egg cell. We go in on the right and see a little fine microscopic glass needle. We remove the DNA, and then we put into the egg cell a cell from the body. And we think it can be almost any kind of cell. Pretty much everything that's been studied works. So a skin cell. You can take a Q-tip and you can swab the inside of the mouth and just take a little cell from your cheek. And then here we have the two cells side by side, and then we give them a little electric shock to fuse them together. It's not to bring them to life like in the Frankenstein movies. Those cells, they're alive. This is just a technique to fuse them together. And the result is you get little embryos, and when those are put into mama cows to carry a pregnancy, you get clones. These are all clones of different ages, so you can see they all have different sizes. Now, in 1999, Geron, my old company, bought Roslin in Scotland, the company that cloned Dolly, to compete with Advanced Cell Technology in trying to do these technologies. And Ian Wilmot published a paper saying that isn't it fortunate that he aligned himself with Geron, who has telomerase, because there's a problem with cloning. Telomeres, the clock of aging, are not reset. And I think a lot of people bought that argument, because after all, if you take a cell from the body and put it in an egg cell, it's an artificial way of reproducing, and maybe a cell that's set itself in its mind, it's going to grow old and die. It's irreversible. And so he reported that Dolly's telomeres were shorter than expected, and so Dolly was a sheep in lamb's clothing, as the joke went. Well, we had reasons we didn't think that was the case. We decided to do a very careful study. And so we looked at, in our system, which we were doing most of, we were cloning cows to make various projects, making proteins in the milk for pharmaceuticals and things. So we took cow cells all the way to old age, genetically tagged them so we knew where the cells were in the dish, and then took old senescent cells that can't divide anymore and put them back in this little time machine called nuclear transfer. Now, I call it a time machine, but it was known that nuclear transfer can take a skin cell back to the beginning of life developmentally. All the existing dogma suggested that, however, the cells stayed old. And so we decided to look. So we very carefully measured telomeres and the lifespan of these cells, and we put them back into egg cells. And what we showed was, and this is actually early data, it's not what was in our paper, but we showed, maybe you can tell from these bar graphs at the top, here are newborn calves, here are old cows, shortened telomeres, and then here are some young cows at a certain set age of 5 to 10 months. Here are clone cows at 5 to 10 months of age. They didn't have shortened telomeres. They actually had longer telomeres than normal, even though they were made from a senescent cell. Now, of course, the cell at the end of its lifespan shouldn't divide more than one or two doublings, let alone enough to make a whole calf, and then to have that calf moo and do all the things cows do. That rhymes. So these are some of these cows that were made from senescent cells, and we named them after the flowers of spring, crocus and lily and Persephone, the Greek goddess I showed you earlier, springing out of the ground every spring. That was our little fun we had with naming them, because most people don't know why we named them these cute names, but it was really to signify this was sort of a demonstration that, in a sense, life is immortal. We've found a way of imparting immortality to a somatic cell. Well, not immortality, an extended lifespan. These cells are not immortal. What we've done by nuclear transfer, shown as NT here, is we've extended telomeres, rewound the clock of aging, making the cells and animals young again, but the cells will age as before. But in this case, we actually made the telomeres longer than a normal animal. Will that lead to animals with longer lifespan? That's an interesting question. We don't know. But it's an interesting test of the whole telomere model of aging. But maybe more significantly than just being a test of the telomere model is what impact it could have in medicine. And this is a concept we call human therapeutic cloning. What if we took a cell, even from an old person, a somatic cell, combined it with an egg cell, the technique called nuclear transfer or cloning, and then take the cells back to the beginning of life in terms of they'll have the whole lifespan again, they'll have rejuvenated lifespan, but also being taken back in time developmentally so they can branch out and become any cell or tissue type in the body. All of those cells and tissues that we would make would be presumably young and would be compatible with you so that your body would not reject them. We think that's an important idea, not just for the treatment of age-related diseases, but for potentially for many areas of medicine. Well, the work began at Advanced Cell, actually back in 96 and 97 on this. This was the infamous study that we did, Jose Sabelli did, taking his own blood cells and his own oral mucosa epithelial cells, he just scraped off his cheek, and he put them into an egg cell and did the nuclear transfer procedure, making cloned embryos, one of which, as you can see, went all the way out to the blastocyst stage, which is where an embryo would normally implant into a uterus to create a pregnancy. The ethically problematic aspect of this was the egg cells he used were cow egg cells. And when I came to Advanced Cell in the fall of 98, there was a presidential moratorium in place on human cloning. There was no distinction made between therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning. In fact, my indication is I don't think anyone in the Clinton administration or in Congress had any conception of therapeutic cloning, that cloning could be used medically. Well, we felt that it could be, should be, and furthermore, we had this issue that we'd filed a patent on nuclear transfer using a surrogate egg cell. The concept is human egg cells would not be available in the necessary numbers you'd need to make this available, certainly on a cost-effective basis. So we wanted to continue this work, but in the face of a presidential moratorium request, we decided we'd better go public with it and discuss it with the President's National Bioethics Advisory Commission. And we did that, and NBAC actually concurred that this work should proceed. So in the spring of 99, we reinitiated this work. These are all cloned human embryos made after approval. It wasn't a formal approval, but there was no indication that NBAC believed we should not do the work. Since then, we've also made, these are actually human somatic cells transfected with green fluorescent protein, generating cloned human embryos that fluoresce. There's an indication that these are the human origin of the somatic cell. And here's an example of a blastocyst and a colony of embryonic stem cells. This was on the cover of the London Daily Mail saying, first cloned human embryo. It wasn't an embryo, it's embryonic stem cells. We've also been working on animal models in parallel. Here on the left you can see cow fibroblasts, in the middle, an embryo, cloned embryo made from one of those fibroblasts, and on the right, embryonic stem cells. And then we've shown that the marker gene, on the right, you can see the marker gene showing up in splenocytes. We've shown that we can therefore turn a skin cell into, not splenocytes, but cartilage in brain and bone and many other important tissues. So we have work going on in parallel, both on human and animal models. Now, of course, the magic of this is these embryonic stem cells will not form just any cell or tissue. They'll actually form complex tissues. And these are the monkey embryonic stem cells. Same is true, though, for human on the upper left panel. And on the upper right panel, you can see full-thickness skin that's formed from these cells. So you'd see hair follicles budding out of the skin. It has epidermis and dermis, sebaceous glands. On the bottom left, you can see a section of jejunum, intestine formed from these cells. And you'll notice the rings around the intestine. Those are the smooth muscle layers that contract the intestine. If you zoomed in, you'd see the mucin-secreting goblet cells, all the architecture of intestine intact. So for patients that have had a resection of the bowel from prostate or from colon cancer, there's potentially the hope of giving them back intestines, something that's never been possible to do before. And then bottom right, a tooth bud. So these cells are, in a sense, magical cells in the sense that they can do things we've never been able to coax cells into doing before. The exciting thing is, of course, think of the combination of being able to make even a complex tissue that you might need that's your own, won't be rejected. You won't have to take immune suppression for the rest of your life, and that are young. They've been taken back in time and have their whole lifespan back again. There's a lot of steps necessary to make all this happen. We've been working hard on the de-differentiation step, the therapeutic cloning step, the nuclear transfer step. There's many other steps involved, selecting out the cells, genetically modifying them in some cases, growing the stem cells, and then selecting out the lineages of cells that you need, and making the particular cells and tissues that you want. We're hard at work at all these areas. I'd like you to imagine with me, there's a lot of opportunities in front of us, and our hope is, of course, that we can find ways of applying these technologies for the benefit of mankind. The intent is not to tinker with the human genome or, you know, to play Frankenstein with life, but to find compassionate ways of applying these technologies. And I think the single best motivation we could have is not a personal seeking after a lengthened lifespan, but love and compassion for our fellow human beings. I think maybe that is the best yardstick we could use in trying to discern right from wrong and the proper use of these technologies. Thank you.
When it comes to spinal cord stem cell research, how can I volunteer to be a guinea pig?
Yeah, I can certainly appreciate that. I'll just tell you a little story quickly. A friend of mine, one of our colleagues at ACT, named Bob Lanza, was giving a talk and on the ethics of therapeutic cloning. And just before him was Jeremy Rifkin. And Jeremy Rifkin is one of our, you know, he was an opponent to all these biotechnologies and all these things. He thinks we're playing
He's
God
and
we should be doing all this stuff. What's that?
He's the Antichrist.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you said that. I didn't say that. And so anyway, Bob Lanza, my colleague, gave this talk similar to what I gave you today. And then Rifkin came up and said, now this, you guys, is what I'm talking about. This is playing God. This is going too far. This is unethical. This is immoral. This is unchristian. This is wrong. To that point, someone stood up in the front row and said, Mr. Rifkin, how dare you? I'm blind. And these are technologies that could potentially give me my eyesight. How dare you stand up here and criticize these technologies? You have no evidence that these people are trying to do anything unethical. And then he quickly backed down, because when you look at people in need, medical need, it's really hard to look them in the face and say, you know. So he said, no, look, I'm not saying this shouldn't be done. I'm just saying we should take our time. He says, wait a minute. I haven't got time. And the whole audience stood up and gave her a standing ovation. And I got to say, the strongest thing you can do right now is to speak out on behalf of whatever medical problems you or your loved ones face. There are members of the U.S. Congress that are trying to criminalize research, like Galileo in prison for studying the sky. People who study cloning go to jail. And there's a Brownback from Kansas, Jay Dickey from Arkansas, others that, you know, they may have good intentions, they're pro-life, they think, you know, we're munching up little babies here, and they have these misguided ideas, but it could cause a lot of harm, and they're currently blocking federal funding for this whole area of research. The NIH, Harold Varmus, the director, wants to fund it, and it's currently not funded still to this day because of these people. So I would really encourage you to write your Congress and, you know, try to influence that.
Dr. Michael West is president and CEO of Advanced Cell Technology. He gave this talk at the 4th Alcor Conference on Life Extension Technologies in Asilomar, California, on June 17, 2000. Check out the Change Surfer website for links on cloning and aging. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes@changesurfer.com. That's jhughes@changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com. Previous Change Surfer radio programs can be listened to from www.changesurfer.com and streaming MP3, thanks to the Radio for All project.